DW Africa Link.
Great to have you with us. Hello and a very warm welcome to Africa Link program. This broadcast is streaming live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Zipporah Nyamura. Just to remind you, we are also live on our partner radio stations across Africa and on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up, Chinese growing presence in Zambia sparks resentment among locals.
Chinese are not good investors. Neither do they mean well for Africa. Those people to me are not investors, but investors.
In Sudan, human rights organizations accuse security forces of killing more than 60 people as protests continue, calling on President Omar al-Bashir to step down.
Thousands want al-Bashir to step down. The people want to overthrow the government peacefully. No one ever tried to provoke the government by unleashing any violence. And we are peaceful.
Now, that is the big question. Will President al-Bashir cave in into this protest that have entered the fourth month? We've got more of that coming up and other stories making headlines across the globe. But first, the news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. With just days to go until the official Brexit deadline, April 12th, British Prime Minister Theresa May came to Germany on Tuesday for a meeting with Chancellor Angela Merkel. Her visit took place one day before an emergency EU summit in Brussels, where a further extension to the Brexit deadline will be discussed. While Merkel has spoken in favour of a postponement of the UK's departure from the European Union, other EU heads of state have not been as forthcoming. The EU's chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, said that any delay would have to be well-founded.
This extension must be useful. It must be used to give more time, if necessary, for the political process to succeed in building a majority in the British Parliament in favour of the withdrawal deal.
A German woman who allegedly joined the Islamic State in Iraq appeared in a court in the city of Munich on Tuesday. The 27-year-old defendant is accused of allowing a 5-year-old Yazidi captive to die of thirst by leaving her chained up outside in the 45 degrees Celsius heat. That's 112 in Fahrenheit. The woman faces life in prison if found guilty of charges ranging from joining a terror group and weapons offences to war crimes and murder. Israel held parliamentary elections on Tuesday with more than 6 million people eligible to vote. The election is billed as the toughest challenge yet for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is seeking a fifth term in office despite being rocked by corruption probes. His Likud party faces a strong challenge from the Blue and White Party of former military chief Benny Gantz. You're listening to DW News. In Nigeria, eyewitnesses say that armed bandits have killed about 60 people in Katsina State, the home state of President Muhammadu Buhari. By Tuesday afternoon, Nigerian police had only confirmed 14 deaths. DW correspondent Zahiruddin Umar has more.
The killings in Erzamir, Jino and Sayo in Katsina State followed a reported confrontation between armed bandits and a local vigilante group on Sunday. Reports of the killings came just a day after Nigerian police had launched Operation Poop Ada, aimed at identifying and arresting such armed bandits in the rural areas of Katsina State. For years, attacks of this kind have occurred in Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's home state. But the ongoing crime rate in neighboring Zamfara State has attracted more attention.
The United Nations has strongly condemned an escalation of violence in Libya, calling for fighting to stop. This follows an airstrike east of Tripoli, which shut down the capital's only functioning airport. The attack was later claimed by Libyan strongman Khalifa Haftar and his Libyan National Army, LNA, who claimed they targeted a military plane and a helicopter. Last week, fighting between pro-government troops and militias in Libya escalated after Haftar's forces launched a military offensive to capture Tripoli. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com or download our mobile app. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
And this is Africa Link program live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Nyinge.
And my name is Zipporah Nyamura. Thank you to you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Please debate with us and tell us what you think about these stories. And we kick off with a big story. China's presence in Africa has always been controversial. In Zambia, Chinese companies are cutting huge deals with the government. The fact that they have substantial financial backing from Beijing means they can get huge stakes in key Zambian government assets.
However, as my colleague Abubakar Jallo found out, the rising number of Chinese are now living in Zambia is giving rise to xenophobic attacks in a country once considered as one of the most peaceful in Southern Africa.
Memories of a recent burglary still haunt young Amy, a Chinese businesswoman who is based in Zambia's copper mining capital, Kitwe. Yan tells me riot broke out in Kitwe against the Chinese shortly after she had set up her shop.
They asked me to run. You see this door? This kind of door is hard to lock. The more nervous I got, the harder it became to lock the door. And then they broke my window.
The looting in Yan's store is a reflection of growing anti-China sentiment in Zambia. There are also fears that they are slowly taking over their country, as Chisimba Kambwili, a former broadcast minister, explains.
I think I would not be surprised that in the next 7 years we'll have a Chinese governor in Zambia. There are too many. They have taken away the business that the local people are doing.
Chinese state-controlled firms are accused of winning almost every government contract, funded not coincidentally by Beijing. One of these deals was the $273 million digital migration project, Zambia's transformation from analog to digital broadcasting, a process which was carried out by Topstar, a joint venture between a Chinese media conglomerate StarTimes and Zambia's national broadcaster ZNBC. We spoke to a whistleblower from Zambia's national broadcaster who says the joint venture even allowed the Chinese company to overlook a local law that states a company cannot be in charge of producing content and at the same time issuing signals.
Precisely, I think that is what we also learned from the genesis of the story. We were told that when we had migrated, ZNBC would entirely be in charge of the content and that Topstar would be in charge of transmission and equipment.
But Topstar became a content service provider and a signal distributor. And the deal was approved without a board, without parliament. A move which has made many media personalities like Kambwili skeptical.
Chinese are not good investors. Neither do they mean well for Africa. Those people to me are not investors, but investors.
That was a former Zambia's information minister, Chisimba Kambwili.
You're right, Jane. And he was speaking to our very own Abubakar Jallo, who was in Zambia covering this. And he's now with us in the studio to expound further on this controversial debate. Abu, we just heard Zambia's former information minister describing the Chinese as infestors, not investors. You had a chance of talking to the locals. Did you get this feeling among the people?
It is a sort of a rhetoric that is being pushed by Kambwili and a lot of other politicians. And the people sort of do believe that, because if you see this higher influx of Chinese investors who are coming to Zambia, and some of them, you know, they invest in certain projects or they work in certain projects. At the end of the day, at the end of this project, they venture into private sector, like doing small jobs, and quite a high number of them. And so people see them as, you know, investing into their economy, taking away their jobs. That is why they brand them as investors and not investors.
But China has always maintained theirs is a win-win situation where both parties benefit. But from what we just heard or what you just said in this report, that's not what many people feel in Zambia, is it?
I mean, of course, you see that the sort of reaction you get in Zambia is overwhelming, but also so many people in Zambia also believe that the Chinese investment bring a gain for Zambia. People do believe it. At the moment, if you look at it from a short-term perspective, you would describe it, or if you do describe it as a win-win situation, it's something that I can definitely agree with. But in the long term, it is not a win-win situation. It's definitely a win for China.
Well, what do you think are some of the positive things that people in Zambia see from the Chinese?
There are definitely positive sides of this. Imagine that you grew up in a country where you haven't really seen much development, and then the Chinese come in. The roads are new. You have electricity. You have brand new, bigger stadiums. You have all this new infrastructure coming up here and there. And if you are someone who live, especially in the capital, Lusaka, you would definitely see this as a development for you. You would be positive about it.
With all these things clear, like the impact of Chinese in Africa, why do you think African countries cannot say no to China?
It's hard to say no to huge money. Imagine you're struggling to fund government project, and as a government, a foreign government comes in and tells you, here, you know, $4-5 billion for this project, no strings attached. You only just pay us, say, in a different, say, in a, as the usual, as the Chinese usually do it, in a PPP, which is a public-private partnership program. So that's the easy money for a local government. The problem is, it's harder for our local government in Africa to basically decide where this money should go, instead of saying, okay, our people, this particular project is not in our interest, it's not in the interest of our country. It's in the interest of the Chinese, but the Chinese will basically push these things.
I was speaking to my colleague there, Abubakar Jallo.
And we have a special report on our page, DW/Africa, on how Chinese companies are cutting huge deals with the government of Zambia. And this particular report has elicited a lot of reaction. One is from Mutala Ahmed. And he says one thing we should realize is that the Chinese are not creating any jobs in Africa. They are only interested in our rich minerals with huge loans with high interest rates.
But there's Emmanuel Nyangila who is supporting them and says DW and Western media are in a campaign to tint Chinese image, trying to scare Africans from siding with Beijing. Thank you very much for your comment.
So tell us what you think about the relationship between Africa and China. Now, still in Africa, the Sudanese police have today ordered its forces not to intervene against demonstrators and said it wanted to encourage an agreement for a peaceful transition of power.
This comes as international and local human rights organizations accuse heavily armed security forces of killing over 60 people in the past 4 months. Here is our correspondent James Shimanyula with that report.
Defiant protesters today continued to pile up the pressure on President Omar al-Bashir to resign, but he has remained adamant. Some experts like Professor Hamdi Hassan Abdel Rahman from Sudan believe it will not be easy for the demonstrators to remove him from power.
He came to power, he was able use co-option and to bring the loyal people to his side.
Many have compared what is happening in Sudan to the 2011 Arab uprising, which saw many Arab leaders forced out of power. But what does Abdel Rahman think?
If you compare what is going on in Sudan as the 2011 Arab uprising, no, there is a big difference. The regional international situation was totally different.
One of the country's prominent activists, Sheikh Abdel Kadir Omar, says theirs is a peaceful demonstration with one clear goal.
Thousands, they want Omar al-Bashir to step down.
Thousands want al-Bashir to step down. The people want to overthrow the government peacefully. Since we started these protests, no one ever tried to provoke the government by unleashing any violence. And we are peaceful. It is powerful.
But Rabi Abdelati, special presidential advisor and one of the spokesmen for President al-Bashir, thinks otherwise.
More than 100 people are in jail and some people have been killed. You know, some attacked property of other people.
The United States has expressed anger at what it calls continued use of extrajudicial detentions of demonstrators following the arrest of opposition leader and human rights activist Sadiq Youssef, who has since been released from detention.
James Shimanyula with that report.
And a quick one here, comment from Rana Ayub says the young people of Algeria and Sudan have learned a different lesson, that nonviolent protests are big enough to remove dictators in power.
Wow, I like that. You can also tell us what you think by leaving a comment and what you think on our page there, DW Africa. In case you've just joined us, you are listening to DW's African Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Ipora Nyamura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and our partner stations across the continent. So what to expect in the next 15 minutes? We get to know of a young Tanzanian who is not only making farming look cool, but also helping people sustain themselves with enough food.
In the near future, I want to cultivate as many acres as I can so that I can ensure that poor people who are living in marginalized community have enough food for the year round at relatively cheap prices.
Make sure you do not miss that report on why and how young people are venturing into farming. We'll also take a look at the 21st EU and China summit currently going on in Brussels. But first to Kenya now, which has now joined South Africa and Tanzania in venturing into battlefield tourism. In case you're wondering what that is, it is a recreational trip to active or former war zones for purposes of sightseeing or historical study.
In the coastal region, hoteliers and wildlife stakeholders say this will help boost tourism in the coastal region as it will be a global attraction not only to locals but to the international community as well. Diana Wanyonyi with more.
I am in Taita Taveta County, Kenyan coastal region. This county is famous for its battlefields. It's here the Germans, who ruled Tanganyika, battled against British colonies in Kenya, Uganda and Somaliland in 1914 and 1918. It's 100 years after the war ended. Willy Mwadilo, a manager at Sarova Taita Hills, where an exhibition of the World War I artifacts collected from the war are kept for the tourists, says the commemoration of the event is marked every November. Although there are some battlefield sites which have been identified, some of them are yet to be marked by the National Museums of Kenya, thus losing them to harsh climatic changes and human activities. Mwadilo, who is also one of Kenya's first certified battlefield tourism guide, elaborates on this.
We have a total of 13 sites, and recently we actually talked to the museum, and 11 of them were actually gazetted. These sites were outside protected areas and they can be easily be used by individual or be run over by a construction or so on. And if we don't preserve them, then we will miss out on battlefield tourism.
Mile 27 is one of the ungazetted battlefield sites near hotel environs where German soldiers attacked a British train in 1914. Donat Mwakio, an assistant warden at the Taita Hills Sanctuary, tells me what transpired.
At Mile 27, about 24 soldiers from the Allied forces were ambushed by a German party, and those 24 lost their life in that particular place. The heaviest casualty was on the British Army and its allied forces.
Mashoti Fort is another ungazetted site here, the place where the hotel has erected a memorial grave to honor African soldiers killed during World War I. Mwadilo, a certified battlefield tour guide, says the initiative was to signify their respect to fallen heroes.
We have the war graves for the British and the Germans. We have the memorial graves for the Indians and Asians, but we don't have for the Africans. That's why we put the plaque there, though we don't have the names, but we've put in memory of those who lost their life in the East African campaign.
Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Tourism and Wildlife, Najib Balala, challenged aviation stakeholders on the efficiency, saying there is need for African airports to improve to international standards so as not to frustrate the international tourists visiting African countries with the poor infrastructure.
We cannot have standards that are in Africa only and they are better in the first world. Or we have frustrations in our airports that makes the international traveler never come back again. Because our aspiration is to see how do we become efficient on the levels of Singapore, the levels of Dubai.
These tourism sites at Taita Taveta are cemeteries, battlefields and memorials.
Diana Wanyonyi reporting from Taita Taveta in Kenya.
Africa on the move.
Now, according to the latest figures from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, more than 256 million people are facing starvation in Africa. The situation has been blamed to extreme weather such as floods, heatwave, storms and drought that has doubled since the early 90s.
But in Tanzania, a young farmer has come up with a project to fight both hunger and malnutrition. Sir Jeff Dennis, who grew up in one of the poorest areas of Tanzania's biggest city, Dar es Salaam, owns a huge farming company. His dream is to provide healthy food at cheap prices for families living in poverty. Lucy Taylor met with him and filed this report.
He's not even 25 years old, but he already runs a farming empire, producing maize, rice, vegetables and a poultry farm in Tanzania. Sir Jeff Dennis is not driven by making money, but rather helping people to sustain themselves with enough food in the city where he grew up.
My dream is to see marginalized poor communities have access to cheap foods whereby they can feed their children and children go to schools when their stomachs are full. So in the near future, I want to cultivate as many acres as I can so that I can ensure that poor people who are living in marginalized community have enough food for the year round at relatively cheap prices.
There are still poor families going hungry in Tanzania, where more than two-thirds of the people live on less than $2 a day. Often they survive on maize instead of meat and vegetables. And this diet can cause serious health problems like stunted growth among children. In Tanzania, malnutrition contributes to 130 child deaths every day. Sir Jeff Dennis wants to change this trend, and he's motivated by his most painful memory, when one of his neighbours lost her 9-month-old baby to malnutrition.
It was a very worst experience in my life. It was very touching, it was very painful. And so I had like this passion, why are poor people dying of hunger and malnutrition? That's something that we can look for good solutions.
Sir Jeff started this business when he was just 17 years old with 50 chickens that cost him everything he had.
This is the place we actually started poultry farming some few years ago.
Back then he was living far from the countryside in one of the poorest areas of Tanzania's biggest city, Dar es Salaam. Since then his business has expanded rapidly. Sir Jeff now supplies more than 20 different traders around the city. His chickens cost a third less than the normal price, and he will soon supply more than 2,000 of them per month. But he has experienced hard times in business.
I remember starting farming when I had nothing in my pocket. It was really tough. You know, farming is sometimes an expensive business. You need to have a lot of money. But actually, I had nothing. My parents were poor. My father was poor. My mother was poor. I was coming from poor neighborhoods. So it was really hard.
Sir Jeff does what he can to keep his prices low. He even rejected an offer from an investor who wanted him to focus more on making money.
Selling the products at cheaper prices is really tough because at the end of the process, your profit is very small, it's a very minimum profit. And at the same time, is that it will take you a longer time to develop into huge farms. So it's sometimes a big challenge. But once I know who I'm fighting for and what I'm targeting, I still get that energy to keep developing my farms and diversifying into other agricultural activities.
Sir Jeff now sells a ton of vegetables every month at low prices and many more tons of cheap rice and maize. And at harvest time, he takes on more than 100 employees. He wants other young graduates to consider following him into farming.
I'm very proud, actually, of when I see the farms that are green and the land, when you're turning a bare land into something green, it's really, really surprising me.
In the future, his dream is to farm thousands more acres like these.
DW's Lucy Taylor with that report. Azipi, this is when you say, wow, wow, wow. A young man who is under 25 and running a farming empire.
And I like what he said. He actually said he turned down an offer to make money, like make lots of profits, so that he could concentrate on what he wanted, which was to make this available for all Tanzanians. I think this is a good example. And you two listening to us there on DW Africa can tell us what you think. Why are young people shying away from farming? We are asking this on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We will be happy to hear what you think about this.
Focus Europe.
You heard it right here in Europe. An annual summit between the European Union and China in Brussels threatens to expose deep cracks in the foundation of one of the world's most important trading relationships.
What are the main tensions between the two trade partners? Anna Horn has been following events for us and now reports.
The leaders of Europe's largest countries are responding with new barriers to blunt Beijing's influence as they increasingly wary the brand of economic nationalism practiced by China. China is increasingly facing headwinds from the EU on the subject of 5G, a key technology in which China wants to position itself as a global leader. France, in particular, has reservations about working with the tech giant Huawei in the future. There are fears of backdoors in the company's products, which would pick up information and pass it on to China, and in the worst case, could even completely shut down entire networks. Adam Dunnett, the Secretary General of the European Union Chamber of Commerce in China, says there are also positive developments.
In terms of trade between the two economies has continued to grow and continue to outpace the global average. So we're doing better. We're doing relatively well in that regard. 10% year over year last year in terms of bilateral trade. We've got about 1 billion euros of product and services leaving China to go to the EU on a daily basis, and about half a billion coming the other way. And that trade surplus is being narrowed. On the investment side, China now invests more in the EU than the EU invests in China.
It's a lot on stake for the Chinese. 5G technology, the new Silk Road and unfair market access rules. China's Prime Minister Li Keqiang wants to dispel concerns and gain confidence at the EU-China summit. The Chinese are already selling $1.2 billion worth of goods to the EU every day. Beijing also sees the project as an opportunity to strengthen its global influence around the world. That's exactly what the EU is skeptic about. Adam Dunnett doesn't see a problem in this relationship based on cooperation and competition.
Cooperation and competition are not mutually exclusive. EU and China have their 2020 strategic agenda for cooperation, so they're already cooperating in four pillar areas of peace and security, prosperity, which includes trade investment, but the people exchanges and sustainable development. And on that latter, for example, on climate change, they're working very well together.
One of Europe's central demands over the past 10 years has been better access for the EU companies to the Chinese market. While China has now acquired a large portfolio of European companies, it is still keeping its own market comparatively closed. Li himself announced a new investment law at its year's People's Congress to attract foreign capital and know-how.
For the EU, obviously, we're still very much interested in market access issues here. So China's made some significant reforms in the last few years, but other areas of opening, such as in the agricultural sector, removing joint venture caps on corn and rice and wheat would be very interesting for European companies.
Prime Minister Li Keqiang could make many friends in Brussels with a real opening of China to foreign companies. However, it is unlikely that China's premier can become concrete here. In any case, it's President Xi Jinping who did not mention the investment agreement with the EU at all during his visit to Europe a few weeks ago.
Anna Hoon with that report. And we have been talking about this on our top story today. We talked about Chinese growing presence in Zambia, which is sparking resentment among the locals. And many of you have been writing to us, even on our Facebook Live there, commenting on that topic. And we have someone by the name Michael Passenger who is saying China has a dangerous agenda in Africa, colonialism in a different form.
Interesting. We have Catherine Ann who says, all I know is that our Zambia's economy is really suffering. Before Lungu and his Chinese deals, I ran a small but profitable business selling clothes and shoes. Now I stopped as I don't have as many customers as before, as not many can afford such luxuries anymore. So sad, really. She doesn't have hope. That is what she's saying.
I like that you're getting these comments right from the Zambians themselves. And we have someone else by the name Adams Zimakabahari who says Chinese are burdening African countries due to the everlasting poverty, like Zambia, as he says.
Thanks so much for your comments. Adam says, do not worry, none is happy being Zambian. Fall in Chinese trap. Put your bitterness aside.
Thank you very much for your comments and for keeping it right here at DW Africa. My name is Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.
for mine.